Hi, I'm Lisa Copeland, and I have with me Ken Bechtol, the host of the Speaking of Partnership podcast. He is a relationship coach as well as a speaker, educator for both single and married people. And what I love about Ken is he helps women and men understand and appreciate each other so they can develop deeper connections and healthy lifelong relationships. Hi, Ken. I want to welcome you.
Oh, yeah. It's great to be here, Lisa. Thanks for having me on.
I'm glad you're here. Before we get started, can you just share a little bit about how you became a relationship coach?
Well, it kind of came to me. I actually did my first relationship coaching in fourth grade on the playground. And it was, you know, kids were just starting to quote unquote go together and date. And I had Jim and Mary, two of my friends, run up to me and say, "Hey, will you do our wedding?" And I performed their marriage right there on the playground. I had never been to a wedding. I made it up. But funny thing was, they asked me to do it like six more times that year. So I guess I wasn't very good at it. But ever since then, people have, even when I was not even of the age where I was dating, I would have older kids that were in my brother's class come to me and be asking me for, you know, advice with their girlfriends and stuff. So it was kind of one of those things. People just have always look to me for that kind of information. I don't know exactly why, but
yeah.
It also was something that was of interest to me. And so I, you know, explored it further in my life. And as I started doing spiritual work and working with my intuition, everybody wanted me to teach men and male and female communication and energy tools and so on. And so it just evolved from there.
That is great. I love it from the playground. That's amazing. Yeah. That is amazing. Well, when Ken and I talked, we had talked about a lot about how women feel like they end up chasing maybe men that might change, men that might be the one, men that might not be the one. So we came up with some ideas for what to share, and that is going to be our topic today, how to stop chasing the maybes. And in the questions we'll be discussing, you're going to learn a lot about why men say the things they do and why they feel the way they do and what you can do differently so being with men is more fun versus exhausting. Because, Ken, as you and I have talked about, there's such a disconnect between how men and women think that oftentimes this really confuses women, especially when men use one-word answers to our questions. So how can a woman get a man or help a man to open up to them?
Well, that's a really great question. It's a very common question, actually, because I know it's one of the frustrations a lot of women have is, you know, you ask a guy something and he gives you a one-word answer, or he gives you a very short answer. And a lot of the reason there's the frustration is we naturally operate from, you know, what we know about ourselves and assume everybody operates the same way. And the unfortunate thing is, when it comes to the sexes, there's a reason we're called the opposite sex. And it's not just because we're physiologically, you know, made differently. It's because we're operationally different.
Right.
And when we look at that and go, oh, wait, what I do is probably the exact opposite of what works best for him, then it gives us some compassion for that person, some understanding, so we can appreciate, oh, this isn't anything personal. They're not trying to, you know, be difficult. They just don't work the way I do. And the biggest thing with communication is that the feminine communication has a lot to do with connection.
Mm-hmm.
And connection provides safety.
Right.
Well, the masculine doesn't have that same desire for safety. Matter of fact, if you ask most men when was the last time they didn't feel safe, they can't think of a time.
Right.
And most women are like 5 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not that driving desire that we have to have this connection to feel safe. So part of what happens is the feminine will respond to questions immediately because it creates connection, or it keeps connection if there's already one there. Because the masculine isn't trying to form that connection or keep a connection, he will have a much slower answer. And it feels uncomfortable. So what typically happens is the feminine will ask a question, hey, "Hey Jim, where do you want to go to vacation this summer?" And if he doesn't reply right away, it's uncomfortable. And so you'll interject something like a modification of that, like, "Well, I was thinking maybe Miami, or we talked about going to the mountains, or we could go to LA." And you start giving him multiple choice. You're filling in those things because that silence is uncomfortable.
Right.
And then you'll do it again if he doesn't answer right away. Well, the thing you have to know about the masculine is, one, men say what they mean and mean what they say. And so we need to actually have the time and the space to make sure we can stand behind what our response is. Where the feminine is driven by that connection. So oftentimes, and you ladies know this, right? When you greet somebody, you see one of your girlfriends, you don't even say hello. You throw a
Yeah.
compliment at them. "Oh my gosh, I love your dress. Oh, that's the cutest outfit." You're not even saying hello. It's so important to see them and have that connection. And you've probably done this. I've talked to so many women that say, "Oh yeah, I do that all the time, and I don't know why." This is why we do this. So have you ever had one of those times where you actually were kind of challenged to come up with a compliment to give to that woman, but you knew that there was something compelling you to say something. So you're like, "Oh, I love those earrings." And then you turn around to your friends like, "I can't believe she was wearing those earrings. They're hideous."
Yeah, I think that's a real common thing.
Yeah, but it's not because you're being insincere. It's because that connection is so compelling. It's so required to feel safe that you'll say whatever you have to say. So you can't understand why the guy won't just answer you.
So is he kind of like just thinking about the best answer?
And what I recommend, and I learned this many years ago, and it was funny because as a man, I'm hearing this, and I'm going, "That would be awesome if that happened." And what I'm going to recommend is, ladies, when you ask a man a question, ask him whatever it is. "Hey Jim, where do you want to go on vacation?" And don't say another word for at least 30 seconds. And that's
Torture.
going to seem like 3 years.
Yeah.
And it's funny because my girlfriend Anna and I will sit there and she'll say something and she'll ask me like five questions in sequence. And I'll just look at her and I'll go, "Was that 30 seconds?" And she goes, "Oh, yeah." And it's like, because it feels like it to her. But the reality is, when you do that, it gives the man the time to actually think about his response. And 30 seconds isn't a magic number. That's where you start. Sometimes it takes him a couple of days to get back to you. So the best way to get the answers from men that you want is give them room. So you ask your question, you go, "Hey, I'd love to know what you think about this." And you walk away, you leave it. He may not have an immediate answer. He may. But if he doesn't, and you keep pushing on him, or you keep asking it in different ways, now he's going, "I don't know which question she really wants an answer to, and I still have to think about that one." And what ends up happening, and this is such a frustration for the masculine and the feminine, and I hear this from women all the time, "How come when I meet a guy and we talk about, are they looking to get married? Because I want to be upfront with that. I want to put that out there because that's something I'm looking for, and I don't want to waste my time." And so they ask the man, "Hey, this is really important to me. I'm looking for a long-term relationship and I want to get married." And they, have this all thought out, and it's very sincere and very passionate, and they want an answer right then. He hasn't even thought about this. He didn't know this question was coming.
Yeah.
This is a big question. But imagine the man's perspective now. He's in a corner. If he doesn't answer, you'll think he's evasive, he doesn't want to talk about that subject, and you'll come up with all these things. You're naturally going to do that. Your brain's going to go, "Oh, this must be why," and you'll talk to your girlfriends, and they'll have several more reasons why he would have done that. None of them will be good. And you'll be coming up with all these terrible things about this that had nothing to do with it. But if he does answer, he has two choices. He can say, "Yeah, I'm not interested in that," because he doesn't know you enough to say he's interested in it with you. And then he knows the relationship's over. He's never going to find out if he's interested enough with you. Or he can say, "Yeah, I'm interested in that," knowing that that's the only way he gets time enough to figure out his real answer.
Wow.
So either way, you don't get the real answer in the beginning when you pressure him like that. So the more you can just say, "Hey, you know what? Just so you know, I'm looking for a long-term relationship. I'd love to know what you're thinking around that whenever you have the time or whenever you want to share that with me. I'd love to know." And you leave it. And yes, it's uncomfortable, but you will get an actual answer. I was working with a woman the other day, and she gave me that exact scenario. And she said, you know, 3 months, 6 months, sometimes a year later, they changed their mind. I said, no, they finally got to their real answer.
Wow. That is really insightful. They finally got to their real answer. I love when you talked about the connection thing because I'll come up from work and I'll never say, hi, how are you? What's going, did you have a good day? I'll come up and go, well, we got to make dinner. What do you think you want for dinner? How was your, you know, it's like right in there. And now I can see that is the con, I just am looking for the connection, whereas he's looking for when he says, what happened to the hi, how are you? That is the disconnect there is I'm looking for the connection he's looking for when he first greets when I first greet him and I greet him wrong. You had said it before. What was he looking for
He needs to
when
have the space to know that he can actually stand behind whatever answer he gave you.
not even an answer though. It's like when we come out, you said when women come up, they want the connection. They don't say to other women, hi, how are you? They'll go, oh my God, those earrings are so beautiful. Whereas what I'm saying is like I work from home and I'll come upstairs. I don't say hi, how are you? I'll go, oh, you know, we got to get this done or what do you want for dinner? I'm like on to the next thing and he'll say to me, what happened to hi, how are you? So why do men need that hi, how are you when you first greet them versus the connection thing? What is
Well,
that?
it's a very different thing because the first of all, and this is one of the funny things that happens with compliments, right? So when you give a compliment to another woman, she typically will reciprocate. When you give one to a man, he usually goes, "Huh, thanks." Because he's not hardwired for connection, so he doesn't feel the need to say, he's just like, okay, thanks. I'm glad you like the shirt. You know, he doesn't have this compulsion to go, oh, and your dress looks great too.
That's
Because
true.
he's not driven by connection. Connection is incredibly powerful. There's so many things that the feminine does strictly around connection, because you got to remember, this all goes back to literally when we were first standing upright, and we're developing our DNA, and there's, you know, the hunter and gatherer type communities where typically the women were, you know, in groups going out and gathering fruits and berries and nuts and whatever. Then they'd come back to the campfire, they're in groups. And what happened? Well, they'd sit around the campfire and they'd talk. Why did they talk? Because that noise kept the animals away. It kept them safe. So if it gets quiet, something's jumping out of the woods. It's a primal instinct that says it's not safe when it's quiet. It doesn't
The
make any
home,
sense in our current communities and culture,
right.
but it's a hardwiring because they've actually studied this. And our DNA, since we first started standing upright, there's been very little that's changed in our DNA. So those same primal instincts are still operating in us, whether they fit our current cultures or not.
Interesting. So women felt like they would be out there talking so that they stayed safe, right?
Yeah, it kept it, there was enough. It's just like, I don't know if you've ever gone hiking. I live in Colorado, and people wear what they call a bear bell because you
No.
don't want to surprise a bear because then it'll startle them and they may attack. Where if you're wearing a bell, you're making some noise. Even if you're not talking or you're hiking by yourself, you're making sure they know of your presence.
Very interesting. So, where were the men when the women were around the campfire? Were
They're
they
out
out
hunting.
hunting?
Yeah.
Ah, so that's how they stayed safe.
Yeah, but think about this. So think about this, Lisa. So as a hunter, what's one of the most important things when you're hunting? You don't want to startle the animal. So your job is to be quiet. You got really good at communicating without talking. Hand signals, just knowing where people were going to be and feeling comfortable with that. So where the feminine got totally uncomfortable with quiet, the masculine learned to get really comfortable with quiet.
So it's totally opposite.
Exact opposite.
Yeah, whereas you get in a car and a guy's quiet. And we want to go, dip, 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 dip. And the guy's like focusing on getting us where we need to be safely. And we're like, dip, 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 dip. How's a man hear that? What does he hear when he hears that? The constant chatter.
It really depends. If he's focused on something, because men are single focused, and when we are single focused, like let's use your car example, So we're driving the car, we're trying to get to, you know, whatever, dinner. He's focused on getting through traffic, getting on the highway at the right point, so on and so forth, getting off at the right exit. He literally screens out everything else. So he's not ignoring you because that would be focusing on two things. And he can't do two things. He can do one. So he's focused on driving you to the dinner. And that's why it's so funny because women oftentimes love the car. They're like, oh, good, we'll get a chance to talk. And he's like, worst place in the world to talk.
I tell my clients that too. Terrible. They can't hear it.
Yeah. And it's because they're already focused on something. It's not a personal affront. It's their way of going, I want to make sure I do this well and get you where you're headed. So I got to focus. It's certainly, if it's a longer trip, it's certainly until they get, you know, basically underway. They're on the highway. Everything's good. Okay. We don't have any more tricky exits or anything. Now we can talk.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about communication because oftentimes we as women are asking men for things and they're not really hearing us. So, how can we get a man to both hear us and then take action on it without us nagging them forever to do it?
That's a great question. And again, it's a very common thing that we run into as men and women trying to communicate. And there's so many pieces to this, but we just talked about one of them, which is that single focus that the men have. Now, the feminine, you guys can multitask till the cows come home, right? You like 12 things going on. You think it's no big deal. I used to work with a woman, Juanita. I'll never forget this. She would sit at her desk, be on her cell phone to her daughter, be on her work phone to a client, and talk to me at the same time.
Oh my God.
And I'm just like, I have to point her, like, are you talking to me now? Are you talking to her now? Who are you talking to? And you wouldn't know that it was seamless. And just watching her, my head was going to explode. So when you know that men are single focused, this is why so oftentimes you'll walk into a room and you'll say something and you think he's ignoring you. He's focused. He doesn't even know you're there. It's not personal. It's how he's wired. And it could be you think he's doing nothing because he's just staring at the TV. And you can do 12 things while you're staring at the TV. He can't.
It's like an emptying of the mind when a
It's not an emptying.
peacefulness
It's a
or
focus.
peacefulness. It's a
No, it's
what?
actually just this is all that matters. Because again, go back to when he was a hunter. You can't be like going, oh, I'm following this animal. Oh, look over there. You'll lose the animal. So he refined this skill of focusing on one thing until that task is complete. Either I get it or the animal gets away. That's the only thing I'm doing. Because it was
Focusing.
literally survival. If they don't catch that animal, they don't eat.
Right.
And you got to remember, back then, they didn't have guns. They had sharp sticks and rocks to take down, you know, a mammoth. So it was a very life-threatening situation. So again, it's not safe to be doing multiple things at once. Or that thing will run over you and kill you. So focus, focus, focus. Now the feminine, because it has all this ability to, you know, really diffuse that awareness and take in all these things and do multiple things, will naturally be thinking he's purposely not listening to me, because everyone can listen to six things at once.
Right.
And so it feels personal affront. It feels like you're being ignored. But he's not. He's just doing what he's doing. So to your question of how do you get them to hear you? Ask them if they can listen right then. Hey, Jim, can I ask you a quick question? And if he says no, he's not saying, no, I don't want to hear your question. He's saying, no, because you could ask me right now and you will sound like Charlie Brown's teacher to me because I'm focused. So if he says no, say, okay, well, this is really important. I'm going to make something up. I need to ask you this so I can make sure I'm on time when we're leaving tonight to get to the movie. Now he knows what it provides, right? What's it going to provide for him? What's it going to provide for you? He can prioritize you and go, okay, as soon as I'm done with this, I need to talk to you. And a lot of times what he'll say is, give me 5 minutes, or as soon as I'm done with this. And again, because the feminine can do multiple things, oftentimes we'll take it as, why? I could have answered you while I'm doing this thing. Why are you not choosing to answer me? Because he can't actually do that. He's not wired to do multiple answers at once. So when you can approach him and say, can you, basically what you're saying is, can you even hear me? And he'll be like, no. Okay, it's not personal. He's telling you that you would be frustrated if you kept talking because I won't remember what you said. So instead, go, thanks. Okay, great. Here's what's on the table and here's what I'm looking for. Now he can put it in that list of priorities. Conversely, if he says yes, great. Now you know he's going, sure, I can listen to that right now. And again, this happens all day, every day. This isn't a one-off situation. So it's really getting practiced at going, oh, I didn't ask you. So my girlfriend and I literally share an office. We sit right next to each other and we work from home. And it's so fascinating because sometimes she'll ask me, she's like, hey, can I ask you something? And if I'm busy, I'm busy, whatever I'm doing. And oftentimes she even catches it because she's gotten used to seeing what do I look like when I'm focused on something. But then there's other times where she'll forget because it's not her nature. It's not what she needs. And she'll just start asking me something. And then she'll go, oh. And she'll stop herself because she realizes I'm not hearing her because she can tell I'm focused. So it takes practice. But if you ask someone, can I ask you a question? You have to be open to either answer. If
Yeah.
that's really a question that only has one answer and he's in trouble for saying, no, I can't hear you right now, well, you're already in trouble.
He can't win.
Well, you can't either.
Yeah, nobody wins.
Yeah. So you've got to be able to go, I'm going to ask him because I want to make sure he hears me. I want his attention. And then if he says no, that's a gift. That's not an insult. He's saying, no, I can't hear you right now.
That is a
Now,
great thing to hear from
yes.
you.
It's totally opposite of how we're wired, and that's why it's so challenging because your whole life you haven't known this. Nobody told you this before. And so you're sitting there going, I spent 30, 40, 50 years thinking they were jerks. And you know, it's like men are horrible people. They're just men. They're just not women. So if we're gonna approach them as I want them to be like me, we're just, you know, it's a train wreck. Now, the second half of your question, Lisa, was about how do you get them to take action? And so let's say you ask, hey, Jim, can I ask you a question? He's like, sure. You ask your question. The biggest thing that will get a man to take action is it's tied directly to who we are as men, which is, you know, providers, protectors, and so on. When you let him know what it'll provide for you, his ears perk up. He's like, provide? I'm a provider. Yes. What can I provide for you? Because he doesn't know what it provides for you. And chances are, what it provides for you is not anything he would ever guess. And I'll give you an example. So, my girlfriend Anna and I, when we first started dating, she would ask me, and we live, you know, just across town from each other, and she'd be like, hey, text me when you get home. In my mind, I'm thinking, what does she think I'm a bad driver and I can't get home safe? I mean, like, there's no bad weather. Why does she need me to text her like I can't drive? And sometimes I'd remember and sometimes I wouldn't. And because it had no importance to me. So if I didn't remember, it was no big deal. Then one day she said, you know, you didn't text me. I said, oh yeah, I'm sorry, but you know, and I said that. I said, what do you think? I can't drive home. She goes, no, it helps me feel connected to you.
Very good.
I
Good
would have never
answer
guessed that
there.
in my life
So do you
because I don't
text
have
her
that desire
now?
for the connection. Yeah, so now I know the price of not texting her.
Ah,
So
and
that's what telling him what it provides for you. When you tell him that, he now knows the price of not doing it.
that's a great thing to know because most women really don't get that. And the way we talk, men aren't going to hear it, but that was like so perfect. It gives me peace of mind to know you're safe. Is that too mother-like to say that?
Whatever it provides for you, because again, he's not going to guess it because it doesn't provide the same thing for him. And that's where we get ourselves in trouble, is we think they already know what it provides. So then we're going to sit there and think, oh, he's so mean, he's so self-centered, he's so rude. These are the common things we hear women say about men, right? Well, it's not because they are that, it's because we want them to be women. But they're not. They don't know what you need. They don't. I had a woman once tell me that if somebody took the trash out for her when it was full, she felt safe. And I was like, okay, I would never in my life correlate a trash can full of trash to being unsafe. But there was something about it for her. As soon as
Yeah.
she communicated that to her husband, she's like, I literally have to tell him to, okay, not yet. Because he wants her to feel safe. So he's constantly trying to take out the trash. She's like, no, hang on, there's more trash.
That's so funny, but that's a great point. I have another question for you too. You often, I've heard you often talk about following my yes or being true to my yes. What does that mean to you, the following my yes or being true to my yes? And how does that affect us as women?
Well, it's huge, and I'm so glad you asked that because one, it's huge for women because what I mean by my yes or your yes is your instinct. Or no, I'm sorry, not your instinct, but your intuition, your gut feeling, your internal guidance system. And what tends to happen, especially in partnerships and romantic relationships, is we get so analytical about it. We don't want to screw it up. We're getting very cautious and strategic, and so we're trying to apply whatever we learned in this workshop or read in that book. And we're not paying any attention to our internal guidance system, what I call our yes. And what ends up happening is one of two things. Either we're just ignoring it, we're not paying any attention whatsoever, so we blow right by it. And then those are those proverbial red flags, right? That you, after the relationship ends, all of a sudden you see all of them go, I recognize all of those. I paid no attention. Or the other side is maybe we do recognize it. We're like, oh, yeah, I know I need this, or this is something that's important to me in this relationship. And then we don't own it. We don't defend it. So our partner says what's important for them, and we put ours back in the back shelf and go, oh, okay, we'll do your thing.
So how do
And
we
this is
stay
where we talk about losing ourselves in relationships.
true then to our true yes?
So that is the big question, right? Because it's easy to give it up. And it's funny because I've worked with so many people where they said, you know, I can defend, if I have a gut feeling about something regarding somebody else, I'll defend it to the end of the world. When it's for me, I give it up instantly.
Yeah.
And what's going on there is we're not feeling like if we own whatever that is, whatever that yes is, that if we stay true to that, well, what if that's the thing that they don't like me about? What if that's why they decide I'm not the right person for them? Which is, it's kind of interesting, right? Because if you think about it, okay, we'll use the term Mr. Right. So whoever Mr. Right is, well, by definition, isn't Mr. Right going to love you for who you are? So whatever your instinct is, your yes is, I need this in this relationship, or this is important to me. Well, then he's going to be good with that because it's you. If he doesn't like you for that thing that's important to you, he's not Mr. Right. He's Mr. Maybe. He's the guy you think you'll be able to change later, or you hope that won't be as important later on. When the reality is, it's your gut feeling. And when I do my podcast of Speaking of Partnership, we have a show, a regular show called Follow Your Yes. And it's literally, I ask all the guests about what was a time when they did follow their yes, what happened, and what was a time when they didn't. And I can't tell you how many people, and these are people that, you know, you've all heard of, Marni Batista, Ariel Ford, Alison Armstrong, Gay Hendricks, you name it. And I can't tell you how many of them have said, oh, well, like, I know a time I didn't follow my yes. It was when I got married. I knew I shouldn't marry that person. 14 years later, they finally owned it and said, what am I doing here? And I mean, we've all been there, right? We've had those things where I had a guest the other, actually, his show airs later this week, and his name's Mark Groves. Yeah, Mark Graves. And he said, don't waste 10 years of your life because you're afraid of a 30-minute conversation. And that's what happens when we don't follow our yes. We're afraid they won't like us for it. We're afraid this is too weird or too abstract. Or what if I can't really explain why it's important? Because sometimes you don't know. It's your body saying, no, this is not the right thing to do. Because a lot of times our yes shows up as a no. Don't do that. Right? It's your body going, uh-uh. Don't get in that car. Don't go date that guy. Whatever it is.
Right.
So that's your instinct. That's your internal system going, uh-uh. Not a good idea. And you can rationalize it, and that's what happens, right? Our brain overrides it, goes, oh, but he's so good looking, he's got a great career, and he's got all these things I've been looking for. Yeah, but when your body's going, no. Gay Hendricks is on our show, and he said he calls it a full body yes. He's like, if
Yeah.
it's not everything saying yes, you don't go there. And he gave some great examples of like little things where there's just like this little niggling doubt, and he disregarded it. And sure enough, things went sideways. So that's what I mean by follow your yes, because when you do that, it does two things. One, you're being true to yourself, but when you do that, you show up authentically.
What about though? Where does this fit into where a lot of times our intuition is not our intuition, it's our mind keeping us from going out of our comfort zone? Is there a difference between that and our true yes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it takes some practice, to get used to how do I know the difference between my true yes and my mind just convincing me of stuff. And one of the best ways you can recognize this, it's super simple, is literally pay attention and notice if you're hearing or you're saying the word should. Should is never, shoulds don't come from inside of you, they come from outside of you. They're a cultural idea. There's somebody told you this is how you should do. This is what you should be doing at this age, or who you should be dating, or what you should be doing for a career. And the way you can kind of test this is think about when you're going to go to lunch. Okay, so let's say you're at work and they say your lunch is from 12 to 1. Typically, what we'll say is, oh, I should go to lunch now because it's 12. But if you didn't have a lunch hour and you just went when you were hungry, do you go, I should go eat now? No, you just say, I'm hungry, I'm gonna go get some food.
That's a really
There's
great
no
way to
should
put
to
it.
it when it's your truth. So if you ever catch should, it means it's external, it's not yours. And that's a lot of times when our mind's going, oh, but Lisa, you should think about this, you should think about that. Bingo, not your internal guidance system.
That's great. That's great, Ken. So I have one more question for you, and that is, a lot of women are very frustrated with dating. It's a constant battle of dating Mr. Maybe versus Mr. Right. So how do women identify Mr. Right from Mr. Maybe, or how do they stop chasing maybes? Because women, men too, are exhausted from dating the maybes, who they think are the maybes. When they see someone's profile online, they go, oh, now that may be Mr. Right.
Well, you're right. I mean, it is. It's one of the most frustrating and exhausting aspects of dating, right? It's like, gosh, all this energy and just to see if they're a good guy or a good gal. And the biggest thing, you described it so well. So you look at a profile and go, ooh, he could be Mr. Right. I interviewed a woman who was the founder of something called eFlirt, and they're a company that helps people do their dating profiles. And she told me that of all the people, and there have been hundreds of people that have actually, met their partner through their services, like 9 out of 10 of them, when they first looked at that profile of the person they married, they said, eh, not really my type. Almost every, and she admitted she did it too. Like she personally had a type she thought was what she needed in her life. That's going to be Mr. Right. That was who she kept dating over and over again. And the guy she married is none of the things on her type list. And the reason I bring this up is it's not about the type. That's a form. That's an external form. It's about the essence. It's about how do you feel when you're with that person.
That's what I
And when
teach
we
my
can get to
clients
the
too.
essence, you can get to the truth of, oh, I'm not going in already deciding he must be Mr. Right, and I'm going to give him leeway because he's got these attributes. He looks like that. He drives his car. He lives in this neighborhood. That's what happens is we already put that on him. So then we start giving him leeway, saying, oh, those other things don't matter, when deep down they do. I don't feel that comfortable with him, but, he's got all these other things. Well, so what? If you don't feel comfortable with the person, that's probably not going to go very long. it's certainly not going to be fun. So the more you can focus on what's the essence, and there's a very simple way to figure out what's important to you as far as what's the essence. In other words, what is that person or that what do you want them to provide for you in your life? And the way you can look at it is you look at your old relationships and you ask yourself, what did I complain about in these relationships? Let's say, for example, you complain because he was always late. Well, then what's the opposite of somebody always being late? Being punctual, right?
Mm-hmm.
So punctual is what you really wanted, and late is what you got.
Right.
That doesn't mean that punctual is the essence. Punctual is just the opposite form. What does punctual provide for you? How do you feel because somebody's punctual? Maybe you feel important. Maybe you feel respected. Maybe you feel, you know, like they honor your time. Whatever it is for you, and there's no wrong answer. That's the essence that you're looking for. So now you're looking for, I want to meet a guy who I feel respected with. I want to meet a guy who I feel safe with. I want to meet a guy who I feel I can trust.
Uh-huh.
Those aren't forms. Those are feelings. Those are experiences. And so when you do that and you are really honest with yourself and say, no, these are important aspects. Essence means it's essential. It's vital to your happiness, to your fulfillment. So when you can identify those for yourself, and I work with people on this all the time, is how do you figure out your essence? Then that's what you go looking for. And so, yeah, you got to start somewhere and go, oh, he's a good-looking guy. I'll give him a shot. But what you're looking for when you're meeting him, instead of going, does he do this, does he do that, you're going, how is this guy being trustworthy? How is this guy being honoring? How is this guy? And let the form that he provides show up, and then you get to pick which one you like.
So, you know, that brings you to, though, that a lot of women put high value on certain qualities like money or a certain body or certain look, you know, certain qualities they have to have, which, as you know, you and I both know, this isn't necessarily what's going to bring them the ultimate in happiness. And then when people don't have it, they suddenly become, they take them, they go, eh, we're done. So how do people get past that? Do they find the essence of the quality they want, what it provides?
Yeah, you've got to get to the essence, because if you don't, you're this is how we repeat the same relationship over and over. Just like Lori Davis, the gal from E-Flirt, told me, she said, you know, I dated the same type of guy over and over again. He worked in a financial district. He lived on this side of New York. Da, 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 da. She goes, and every one of my relationships was the same.
Right.
And then she let go of that, looked at the essence, meets a guy who does none of the things she thought she needed, and she's married and happy as can be.
Yeah.
Because it has nothing to do with the form. And the more we can let go of that, because it's hard. We're constantly bombarded with these whole ideas that form is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that form, and we think that's what made my friend happy. Oh, look, he does this, he looks like that, or whatever it is. He has this kind of financial stability or this kind of education, so that must be what makes people happy. No, that's what made her happy. And it wasn't the form that did it. It was how she felt being with him.
Right.
So we've got to get past the idea that it's about the external and go, how do I feel around this person? Because here's what the real goal is. And every woman I've ever said this to totally agrees. So I want you all to think about this for yourself. The goal is to meet a man you don't want to live without, not because of who he is, but because of who you are when you're with him.
Wow.
And most of us look at, what are they bringing to this? And the other thing to ask yourself is, what am I bringing to this partnership?
Great questions, Ken.
Most people, when you ask them, they can tell me everything they want their partner to provide. And I say, well, what are you going to provide? Why does that matter?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you know if you're going to feel like providing that with this person if you don't even know what those things are you're excited to provide?
That's a great question.
Because what happens here, Lisa, is when we go looking for Mr. Right, looking strictly for form, not knowing what what that relationship is going to provide for us. What's the purpose of that relationship? It's kind of like going to the grocery store and you're starving. And you walk around the grocery store, a building that's full of nothing but food, and you can't find anything. You're like, there's nothing here. Are you kidding me? There's 50,000 food items and you can't find anything because you don't know what you're looking for. You're just starving. So it's taking the time to figure out what do I need? What's the purpose of this person in my life? What's the essence that I'm looking for so I have a fulfilled experience? And then you go looking for that. And you may not have ever heard of the product on the shelf. And you're going, yeah, that looks, I think that thing's going to, I don't know what a green juice is, but I'm going to try it because it's something tells me, try this. And you explore. And all of a sudden you're a green juice junkie because it's the best thing you've ever had. So it's getting outside of the idea that I already know what the form is because it's based on such a small sampling. I used to ask women in my workshops, I'd say, you know, we always make these generalizations, right? Like men are like this or men are like that. And I said, well, how many men have you dated? Everybody listening knows whatever that number is roughly for themselves, 5, 10, 50, whatever it is. And I said, well, there's 3.5 billion plus men on the planet. So statistically, your sample doesn't count. It would be thrown out. You can't make any conclusion from that small of a sample group. You haven't done enough research. Go date more. And then you'll actually go, oh, now I have a better understanding. So you can either do that, which can be time consuming, because you'll likely keep dating the same people, or you can do what we just talked about, get clear on the purpose, get clear on what the essence is, and then go shopping with that information.
It
because what we're
like,
looking for is what we can find. We can't find it if we don't know what it is.
And it seems like a lot of people also date from fear. Fear, and it is that fear of not feeling safe, and that's why they look for high perceived value qualities like money or like certain aspects of health, things like that. Would you agree with that? Or?
Well, part of the fear is really out of scarcity. And again, it's the idea that there aren't many men left. There's nobody in my age group, whatever it is. And I don't know if any of you listening know this, but just I think it was last spring they announced that there are more single people in America now than married.
Yeah.
Which is the first time it's ever been the case. And I geeked out one day and took a look at the census information. And, you know, because I'll have different clients at different age groups, and they're like, you know, where do I meet single guys in my age group? And so I would look on the computer, like, okay, what's your zip code? Okay, here's the breakdown. Yeah, 35% of the men in your neighborhood are single, so I don't know how you're not seeing any. The reason we don't see any is because we're operating from that belief.
Right, a limiting belief.
Well, it's actually a process in our brains. It's called the reticular activator.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does, it's the process in our brain that when we decide we want to buy a red car, instantly you see red cars everywhere.
Right.
And it's not that there were more red cars all of a sudden. It's because your brain's focused on it, so it's looking for them. So if your brain's saying all the men are married, guess what you're going to see?
Married men.
The married men. You're not going to see the 30 or 40% that are single because your brain's not working for you. It's not doing that. So that's why it's important to know, what am I looking for? What's the purpose? What's the essence? And then feed that into the reticular activator. And now it'll start going, oh, I wonder if that's a form of honesty. Hey, I never saw that before. That's a different way honesty shows up. And it'll expand your options where you're going to go, wow, this is a form I didn't know existed, and it's my favorite one ever.
Yeah.
So you're broadening the possibilities instead of going, oh, there aren't many of these, because our nature is going to be protective, right? So we're going to protect ourselves. So if we had a bad experience with whatever, men who worked in this industry. Or a classic was the old, oh no, he's a whatever sign. Don't ever date that sign again. Really? Like instantly 1/12 of the population is off your plate? Well, I hope you don't date 11 different signs or 12 different signs and you're out of action. There's nothing left. So when we, instead of reducing the possibilities, expand the possibilities, but we're doing it based on what we know we need in our heart, now we're like, cool. I never even thought about how generous that is. He didn't necessarily, you know, pay for dinner every time, but man, he's so generous with his time, or generous with his support, or generous with his experiences. And then you start going, wow, I don't even care if he pays for the bill. That part's way cooler than anything I've ever seen.
Then
So
we
now
stop
we're getting to
worrying, yeah.
the detail. And it's funny because if you, I mean, I gave the example earlier, right? How many people go, the person I married wasn't anything like I thought they would be? That tells you they left form behind and went, what does it provide? What's the essence here in this relationship? That's who I want to marry. I don't care what their form is. And please understand, it doesn't mean you're just going to be drawn to ugly people or something. It simply means you're going to find the person that you see that incredible beauty in them, whatever form they're in. And likewise, yours is going to be appreciated because you're owning what matters to you. And one of the things men tell me over and over again is, I love a woman who's confident, authentic, and passionate. Not passionate like romantically, but like has passions and expresses them. And so many times that's the thing we hide because we think it's weird. I can't tell him I like to quilt. He'll think I'm an old lady or whatever it is. When the reality is, we don't care what it is. We love that stuff. Matter of fact, they've proven biologically that when a man witnesses a woman either doing whatever her passion is or talking about that passion, he doesn't even have to understand it. Biologically, there's a download of hormones that provide an overwhelming feeling of well-being for the man. He literally
Wow.
gets a high from watching you be passionate about whatever you're passionate about.
That is really great information, Ken. You've shared so many wonderful things with us today, and I love that you could be here with us. I love what you talked about with the patterns. I found that too. We all, one of the biggest thing I teach women is, if it didn't work for you all these years, what makes you think it's going to work now? Because we are so drawn to the same person. If they're unsafe, but they feel safe to us, because what you're saying, the form feels safe to us. And I love how you got into the essence. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it will help a lot of women on this call. And if
You're
you would
welcome.
like, go ahead, what were you going to say?
I was just gonna say you're very welcome. I mean, it's sad that this isn't taught when we're in school because it would change our world entirely.
Totally.
But yeah, and to your comment about, you're drawn to the same form because it feels safe. I would actually counter that, Lisa. It's not that it feels safe, it feels familiar.
Yeah, like you've known them your whole life
Yeah,
because you have.
and I survived that, so at least I know I won't die. When it's like, well, is that really the bar you're setting? Oh, good. At least I know I won't die. That's my high bar. No, I hope you have a higher standard than that for yourself. But
That's
that's what
why
we end up doing. That's what
I say it
survival
feels
is.
safe, but it's unsafe.
Yeah, that's what survival is. So when we can go, oh, that's not really a very high standard. It's kind of like, when you hear things where people say, oh, this house is built to code. Well, building codes are the lowest possible standard that they consider safe to live in. That's not really something to brag about. But that's what we do with our lives. We go, what's the lowest possible standard that I can live in?
Oh, that's sad. Yeah, but that is
And we
it.
don't even realize that's what we're doing. So being aware of that and going, wait a minute, that's just like, yes, that's survival. I can thrive. I can go way beyond that. That's a no-brainer. I've survived my whole life. Let's step it up. Then that's where the magic happens.
And everyone now has the ability to have magic. And if you would like to learn more about Ken, he does a Speaking of Partnership podcast, which I was blessed to be part of. Thank you,
You're
Ken.
great.
And you can learn more about him at speakingofpartnership.com. And you can also look for the link at underneath this recording, and you'll find out more about Ken and how you can get more information about him. Ken, thank you for being here.
Oh, you're so welcome. You're absolutely welcome. And I hope this has been valuable to the listeners because it's something I think you could tell from my voice. I'm very passionate about, and I've seen the huge changes it can make for people. So take one thing out of what we talked about today and apply it in your life, and it will make dramatic changes in your experience.
Definitely. And I think you brought some really amazing things up today for helping women see how that Mr. Maybe actually might be a Mr. Right sometimes. We're just looking at the wrong things for what is going to be the best thing for us. So thank you so much. Okay, everyone, enjoy. Like Ken said, take something, go out and use it, and I'll talk to you another time.
Bye-bye.